The Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program.
And aloha, America. Sorry we had a cord unplugged here. We're having a really hard time with our hardware today. If you've been trying to reach our website for the last 2 hours, we are under a hacker attack. And we're working to fix that right now. Oddly enough, we were just getting ready to move to a new, larger, and faster server anyway. So I think we're probably just going to go ahead and do that. And I think the hacker attack is significant. At the very least, there are people out there who simply don't want you to be able to read what we're putting up on our website, which is basically links to news stories around the world and a commentary on same. Right now, of course, this being a very, very, how should I put this, hazardous time for the powers that be. They're feeling their control over the people of the world start to slip, and they're going to behave like spoiled little babies is basically what they're doing, or at least I hope that's all there is to it. You know, and we're not actually seeing the beginning of an attack on all of the Patriot blogs in order to silence them ahead of some great hoax to start World War III. But in any event, the bottom line is we must be being effective. We must be getting the word out there, because otherwise they wouldn't waste time attacking us. A couple of stories we're looking at, as you already heard, the Olympics are kind of off to a sad start right now. With this luge athlete, very, you know, young man, had a tremendous accident. It is such a dangerous sport. You're basically, you know, sliding down what amounts to a bobsled run without the bobsled around you for protection. And so it was a real tragedy. Nobody likes to see this kind of thing happen whatsoever. Another story that we're following right now, three people have been killed in an Alabama University shooting. Three people were killed. One is wounded at the University of Alabama in Huntsville. They have apparently arrested a female shooter. There are unconfirmed reports that it was one of the university professors or associate professor. And so we're going to be keeping an eye on that right now. I forgot to mention the date. It is Friday, February 12th, 2010. Thank goodness it's Friday. Thank goodness it's Friday, so forth and so on. And, you know, obviously big news today is this huge snowstorm, which has moved into the American Southeast. And apparently there's another big one getting ready to come down into the plains and the Northeast as well. The storm is down there. It's going to be going into next Saturday. And here's the bottom line. It is snowing in places that don't get snow. They don't have snow plows. They don't have road equipment for dealing with the winter. Places are getting snow that have not seen snow in over 10 years, and it's just coming down. The traffics are snarled up. It's just absolutely crazy. They're getting snow in Mississippi. They're getting snow in Florida, across Texas. It's just absolutely amazing. And still, the corporate media and the government are still trying to sell you this idea that the earth is getting warmer and you are to blame, and they're still lusting for those carbon taxes, and they still want you to submit your free will to a new global government that's going to tell you how to live so that you are less of a threat to planet Earth. And it's complete and utter nonsense. Now, we talked the other day about how the global warming cult was going to rebrand, where they were basically saying, oh, well, those old agencies have been compromised. We're going to start new agencies. And they've started a new website, climate.gov, and it is, you know, it's brand new website, and it's all pretty, and, you know, hey, it's a whole new day. And yet they're selling exactly the same snake oil that we have been had forced on us for the last, you know, going on 10 years. And the reality is it's already been busted for selectively filtering the data to support the agenda. They have a display there about the sea ice extent, and it stops in 2007, 3 years ago. They basically said, because the ice was, you know, basically shrinking and shrinking till 2007. And at that point, they stop and say, see, the ice caps are melting, and, you know, this proves global warming. Unfortunately, 2008 and 2009, and now we're starting to get the 2010 sea ice data, and satellite imagery is showing that the ice is expanding rapidly. It's gaining area. The ice caps are coming back. But the new website, climate.gov, they don't want you to see that because they're still selling you this agenda. And what's amazing is, and maybe this is part of the disconnect that we're seeing from the propagandists and the government and the media, it takes only about 2 minutes with a good search engine to find out that, you know, the more recent ice data, and that it shows that the Arctic sea ice cap is expanding again. Certainly the fact that our snow line in this winter is moving further and further south should be a dead giveaway that in point of fact we're getting cooler. We are getting cooler. Now, I don't know if the government and the corporate media really thinks they're going to convince the rest of the world, you know, of their agenda right now. The latest polls show that confidence and trust in this whole human-caused global warming thing is just hitting rock bottom. It's collapsing right in front of them. But they seem to want to be able to prove, at least to themselves, that they can still maintain the fiction, that they can still go through the motions. Basically what it is whether or not you believe in global warming, they are desperate to make sure that you don't believe there was a conspiracy to defraud the entire planet. See, as we were talking about yesterday, conspiracies are something, well, we all agree that Bernie Madoff and his family and associates conspired to loot $65 billion from the American people. We have no problem talking about conspiracies lower down in our society. There are laws that control them. There are evidence rules in court that judges must look at to determine whether or not a conspiracy exists. But there's this social block regarding conspiracies by the very top leaders. Because if you're studying conspiracies, then what you're doing is you're trying to find out who is to blame for what went wrong. And, of course, the next step from that is, who do we have to punish? If there's a conspiracy in the death of John F. Kennedy, there are some murderers walking around who ought to be in jail. If there was a conspiracy to lie us into the war in Iraq, then we've got a bunch of war criminals who should be at The Hague, and so forth and so on. So, the government is actively working to try and make sure that even though global warming has failed as a public issue right now, they're trying to maintain the illusion, and they're having their own little internal investigations. Penn State said, we did nothing wrong, please give us more grant money. Because they're trying to basically maintain, as if you actually come to the conclusion there was a conspiracy, then you're going to say, okay, who's to blame? And more to the point, what else are we being lied about? Which I think is the real issue here, and that may be the reason my website got hacked. It seems sometimes that the motto of the U.S. government is, if at first you don't succeed, lie, lie again. Everybody, time for your two-minute take. Repeat after me. Ignorance is strength. Slavery is freedom. War is peace. Warming is freezing. Okay, you got it all now there. The UN, Ban Ki-moon, basically came out and announced that they're mobilizing their panel to start the climate change funding. They realize they're in a race. They're in a race to loot the people of planet Earth for their socialistic programs before the people of planet Earth and say, wait a minute, we're not going to give you any money to combat global warming. We're freezing our tushies off right now. And so it's a race. They're trying to ramrod this thing through because the UN and certainly the U.S. federal government, they are desperate for those carbon taxes. They don't care if you know they're lying through their teeth to impose yet another tax on you. You know, as long as they can persuade you not to storm the steps of Capitol Building and White House with flaming torches and pitchforks here. Now, speaking of desperation for money, and, the country going even deeper into debt. Today, Obama signed the bill lifting the federal debt limit to $14.3 trillion. And he basically, he put in this little thing. He wanted a provision called PAYGO, the pay-as-you-go. The rules of this new increase in debt is saying that all future spending increases, have to be paid for with either cuts in other areas of spending or tax increases. And I don't think it takes too many minutes to figure out that what he's talking about is tax increases. Because that's all government knows how to do. That's the only place they can get their money. Tax increases on you and on me. They're spending, we get to pay. That's the theory. But it's breaking down, and we'll talk about it when we come back.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Welcome to What Really Happened Radio. Call Mike now at 866-582-9933. 866-582-9933.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. And I did forget to mention that Oathman is in the control room today, twiddling the dials, feeding the giant mutant hamster, and answering your phone calls if you want to get in the air and talk about the economy and all these other various things that are going on. Now, looking through the headlines for the financial news, it is not good. Okay, there is virtually nothing to really point to and say the situation is improving. The corporate media is trying to do that. You know, the dollar, you know, climbed against certain currencies, but it fell against certain others. And it's always a zero-sum game. There is no absolute unit of value that the dollar can be related against. They're all fluctuating against each other, which is how they sort of conceal overall the loss in value of all the currencies, because they're all using the same reserve system of banking that simply puts out more and more money as they feel it's needed and devalues all of it ultimately. All right, the headlines we're looking at: foreclosure numbers may foretell delinquency surge. Think we're out of the real estate crunch? Wrong. The number of U.S. households facing foreclosure in January increased 15% from the same month last year, and a surge in cash-strapped homeowners who've fallen behind in mortgages could be on the way. In other words, we're going to start seeing more foreclosures, which is going to trigger a whole new round of mortgage company and banks failures, or at least screaming for more bailouts of your tax dollars. Metro Atlanta foreclosures skyrocket this month. Foreclosure notices in Metro Atlanta jumped 27% in February compared with January. That's one quarter more in a single month. It's just amazing. And the foreclosures are not just in the subprimes. The foreclosures are happening across the entire economic spectrum because people are simply running out of money. Over in Arizona, same thing. Foreclosures are not slowing down. The situation is not improving. And apparently, in January, according to the latest report from the W.P. Carey School of Business at Arizona State University, half of the existing home transactions in Arizona are foreclosure operations. Half. Dallas-Fort Worth quarterly foreclosures postings jumped 22%. Anybody who says that the economy is rebounding, at least for we the American people, they are blowing smoke into your bodily orifices. Number of New Yorkers at risk of losing their home to foreclosure surges. Foreclosures continued to rattle New Yorkers in January, with Brooklyn residents bearing much of the pain. You don't suppose the government's lying to us about the economic recovery, do you? Now, one of the things that is really very worrying to a lot of people, as we mentioned a couple of weeks ago, the federal government needs to come up with about $3.5 trillion in real cash, not just more printing press stuff from the Federal Reserve. But they need to come up with about $3 trillion to avoid a default, and that means somebody has to be willing to buy the debt. And right now, the situation that we are seeing is that China is telling their bankers and their investors to dump all non-U.S. government-backed debt instruments. They're dumping them on the market. Sometimes they're taking a loss. Now, what do they mean by a U.S. government-backed debt instrument? That basically means the U.S. government promises that if the debt is not repaid, they will tax you and me to give the money to China. That's what that basically means in a nutshell. The bond sales, both long and short term, are not doing well at all. And now we're hearing that the auction of 30-year Treasury bills did not go very well at all. There has been some suspicion that the Federal Reserve is literally creating up new money to go and buy the T-bills in order to sort of prop up demand for that, the same way that they play around with the stock market with the plunge protection team. But the bottom line is that our entire economy is this hollow shell. and it's about to collapse. Another story we have on the front page of what really happened, if and when it comes back up again, and we may have to wait until we get the new server. Stick a fork in it, the dollar is done. And basically what they're talking about is there is no rally. The rally is an illusion because other currencies around the world are also in trouble. Other governments are in trouble. Greece is in trouble. Iceland already went broke and kicked out their government. The whole system is going down together. And this talk about rally and up and down and everything is simply a matter of who is sinking faster than who. Now, if you want a real measure of what is going on in the United States of America right now that you can thank the Federal Reserve and the U.S. federal government for, Credit Suisse has declared that the United States is a riskier investment than Indonesia. Now, I don't mean to slam anybody from Indonesia. It's a very beautiful place. We have some friends who recently moved out of the United States and moved over to Indonesia, and they absolutely love it. But, you know, the United States is supposed to be this economic powerhouse, and now we're falling down the ladder of trustworthy places to put money in. Now we're below Indonesia. It's a rather scary situation. So, what is going on here? This is my theory. Okay, and it is my theory. It's not backed up by anything. That segment of our society that believes that whatever gods they pray to intended for the vast majority of people to be their personal economic slaves and work their lives away in order to give them wealth and privilege and power and temples to their vanity, hijacked the original economic system of the United States of America and imposed on us, through corruption and bribery and threats and whatever, a banking system intentionally designed to siphon wealth from the people to the owners of the private bank, the Federal Reserve. The problem right now is the system worked. Almost all of the wealth of the United States of America is concentrated in the hands of Wall Street and Washington, D.C. And the problem is the fangs and talons that they are sending out to grab more from us are coming back with little more than wood splinters from scraping the bottom of the barrel. And that's the downfall of the system, because the designers of the Federal Reserve never planned on what to do to restore balance and stability in our society once they succeeded in grabbing all the money to themselves. Now, maybe they didn't care or didn't think they were going to have to worry about it in their own lifetime, or maybe they never anticipated it was going to work as well as it did. But the bottom line is this incredible cash grab by Wall Street, by Washington, D.C., is strangling the nation and killing the 300 million geese that are laying all these golden eggs. And they're standing around and say, this worked for the last almost 100 years. How come it's not working anymore? Well, because nobody was thinking about how we, the American people, are supposed to go on earning money to pay all the bills. And that was their blind spot and potentially their downfall. Now, going over to Great Britain, actually we're coming down to the end of the segment here, real quick story. 1 in 8 shops in Great Britain are now empty. That's their retail vacancy rate across the entire country. 1 out of every 8 stores is simply boarded up. That is just abysmal. Just abysmal. When we come back, got a little statement from the Labour's housing minister that is absolutely going to curl your hair. Maybe it might be his let him eat cake moment. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio? Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
You're listening to the Genesis Communications Network. And now, set your eyes on the future, and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. We're going to go right to the phones. We've got Stony Wolf in Minnesota. Aloha, Stony. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Aloha. How are you? I'm seeing one listener on my internet radio location here at internet radio. I had to do a frantic search here to locate the show tonight. I'm a frequent listener, actually, this week. And I had some other questions that I wanted to ask you. And of course, I just got your email here in regards to this situation.
Yeah, we got hacked. There's still, you know, every time the technicians are working on it right now, every time they enable the website, it gets flooded with just, you know, tens of thousands of HTTP requests, and it appears it's a distributed denial of service attack. And so they're working on trying to set up some filters right now. Obviously, there's something at the site that somebody out there doesn't want you to see, which is what we're talking about here on the show today.
And I have been diligently promoting, and I'm hoping that I am not part of the problem, but I think a lot of people
are. Oh, of course not. That's nonsense. That's nonsense. You're not part of the problem. There are people out there in the world who think that the gods have decreed that they have the right to control what everybody else around them sees, hears, and reads. And, of course, we know that's complete nonsense. Democracy is founded on freedom of speech and expression and a respectful, mutual sharing of ideas. Unfortunately, we know there's a segment of our society that when they can't win the argument with facts, logic, and law, they're going to scream and throw tantrums, and they're going to cut wires, and they're going to trash websites, and they're going to attack people and try and get them fired and all the rest of that other stuff. And we all know who we're talking about,
right?
And they're not very nice people. And, you know, this kind of action on their part, it only underscores the fact that they are unable to win their debate with facts, law, and logic. Otherwise, they wouldn't need to resort to this kind of underhanded, sneaky, stab-in-the-back kind of thing.
And obviously, yeah, the censorship thing is obviously alive and well. And as far as the economy goes, and I have a very big question in regards to this. I mean, my father I spoke to last night, I could hear it in his voice. A man who worked on the railroad for God knows how many years. He lost $12,000 yesterday in the stock.
My question is,
you know what? He was trying.
And I thought I was having a bad day.
He's trying not to even express this, you know, to me, but I can hear it in his voice. The other thing is that I have a daughter who has a CD account that has been, under court order that she cannot get to it until the age of 18. My big question here is, is it going to be there? Is it actually going to be guaranteed that she's even protected here? Because it's up to like $3,000 or $4,000, and for an 18-year-old, that's a lot of hope. You know what I'm saying? And I'm wondering, should I go to court at this point in time and try to get that withdrawn from the small bank that it's in?
You really need to talk to a lawyer about that.
Right.
I'm not a lawyer. I played one once on television, but that was a long time ago.
Probably I'm not asking for legal advice, but let's look at it from the collective standpoint and just say, if you have a CD account, what is the best approach at this point in time for everybody?
Boy, that is a rough question. I'm the last person to be offering financial advice to anybody.
I'm the second from the last, so I think
let me tell you where I'm coming from. I am not conversant with the rules under which these various long-term accounts operate. I know that for certain retirement accounts, early withdrawal, and there's tax penalties. I don't know how that applies to a CD. You got to talk to a banker. You got to talk to an expert. I'm not going to pretend to know anything about this subject.
But the federal, I guess what I'm also talking about is, what is going on here, and how are you protected by, you know, the insurance? You know how they say that you're protected up to $100,000 or what have you by FDIC? How is that? Is that changing now?
I don't think it's changing. What's changing is the amount of insurance premiums they are charging the various member banks. And the problem is, as more and more banks fail and they have to bail them out, you know, they're having to raise the rates.
Right. So the penalty gets higher.
Well, no, it's not a penalty. It's premiums. It's insurance premiums. But that can drive more and more of the banks underwater. I'm really not the person to talk to, and I'm going to have to refer you to an expert who knows more about it than I do.
Okay.
Okay, I got to get back. Okay, the reason I'm stammering and stuttering at the same time I'm working here, we're trying to get our website back up and running. Thank you very much for the phone call. We're going to let you. Okay, the story I wanted to talk to you about at the beginning of this segment. Okay, Labour's Housing Minister, Great Britain, John Healey, who's one of the guys who was caught up in this whole thing about the expenses scandal. He put something like, you know, £129,000 of expenses on his second home. Okay, he's losing it, is what he's doing. Okay, because he came out with a statement saying that having your home repossessed might be your best option right now. And you know, this is kind of getting into that area of let them eat cake, in terms of sheer insensitivity and being out of touch, you know, with what's going on out here, you know, in the real world. And, you know, I think the best option right now might be a trip to that large wooden block they still have over there at the Tower of London, because that is an incredibly insensitive statement for him to be making. I mean, this is a guy with more than one home, you know, and he might look at losing a second or third home on a purely financial basis. But we're talking about people's primary residence. The place where they raise their family, where they live. They're attached to it emotionally, not just financially. They're attached to it emotionally. And for him to stand up and say, you know, it might be the best thing in the world happen for you, have it foreclosed on. I think it's nonsense here. As long as we're talking about Britain over in the Eurozone, things are not well at all. If you think the economic woes are confined to the United States, you are wrong. And here is the problem with globalization. Globalization is the reason why an economic calamity in the United States has become a global economic disaster. Now, the Eurozone GDP recovery is faltering. It's not meeting their forecast here. Apparently, this idea of some kind of a rescue deal for Greece has run into a roadblock. Angela Merkel in Germany is saying that they can't be part of it and they can't fund it. And I want you to be taking a very good look here at this whole, you know, European Union, because it is a model for the kind of problems we're going to see if somebody does, in fact, impose a global government and a global financial system on us all, as the UN clearly wants to. Now, national borders, in an economic context, national borders serve the same function as fireproof doors on a building or watertight bulkheads in a boat. Yes, if you prop the doors open and prop the bulkheads open, you can get around the ship a lot faster. And for a time, it looks like things are just going really smooth and much more efficiently. Until you get a leak or a fire, and then the whole system comes down. Well, we're seeing that right now. The globalists, for the last couple of decades, have been knocking down those international barriers to commerce. And that is the reason why an economic downturn in the United States is dragging the rest of the planet down with it. This is why globalism is such a bad idea. All right, we're going to take another break here. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
This is the GCN Radio Network.
What this country is coming to, I sure would like to know. If they don't do something by and by, the rich will live in. The poor will die. Doggone. I mean, the panic is on.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. We're talking about the economy. We're talking about the current political situation. A new poll is indicating that very few Americans are planning on re-electing the current members of Congress. I don't know why they wasted money on a poll like this. It's a study in foregone conclusion. And if you're really going to have a poll on what we're going to do with the incumbent Congress, I do feel that tar and feathers ought to be one of the options that you are allowed to pick from here. Now, more and more people are beginning to pick up on this idea of the odious debt. And I've talked about this many times over the past several months. And what it is a principle in international law, an established legal principle, that the people of a nation are not obligated for a government's debt to the extent that it is incurred to launch aggressive wars or to suppress the people of the country. So what that means is, under international law, you and I and the person in the next hallway and all the rest of that, we are not on the hook for all the money that has been spent on all of these wars, Iraq, Afghanistan, Somalia, Yemen, Pakistan, wherever else they are, I've lost count. Nor are we obligated to repay the money borrowed to basically create a prison around us. We are under the principle of the odious debt. We are not obligated to cover the debt for TV cameras, for naked body scanners, for all these TSA bozos with the rubber gloves who are, you know, getting ready to fondle our wives' titties under the ludicrous idea that Al-Qaeda is now having explosive breast implants installed on suicide bombers. I mean, this is, you know, if you wrote that into a TV script or a movie script, people would assume it was a comedy. Have to be a comedy. It's just too ludicrous to be taken serious. And if the government is saying, yes, this is what we're doing. And more people are beginning to pick up on that and say, look, the economy is really in terrible, terrible shape. And the government's talking about raising taxes to pay off all this debt. Are we really, legally, under international law, obligated to pay those bills? And the answer is no. Under international law, no. The politicians who borrow that money to start wars, especially illegal wars, the politicians who borrow that money in order to point TV cameras at us and have TSA fondling us at the airport and naked body scanners and trackers on our cell phones and machines that listen to our phone calls and read our email and loot our computers and hack into websites, they are obligated for those debts. And I've been saying it for a long time. Congress got into this financial hole without our permission. And they can get out or not without our help. Because Congress isn't listening to us. A year ago, during that whole TARP bailout debate in Congress, the American people, 90%, said, do not use taxpayer money to bail out Wall Street. And Congress went ahead and did it anyway, and now they're saying, well, you got to pay taxes to cover all that money. I'm sorry, from where I sit, that's taxation without representation. And the school I went to as a child said taxation without representation was a legitimate reason to fire the government, as we did back in 1776. So people are saying, and I tell you, I get so much email from people who are saying, I can see it now. It's going to collapse. Let's have it, get it over with. I'm tired of waiting. It's going to collapse. There's nothing we can do to stop it. Let's let it collapse. Get out the debris out of the way and start working on something better to replace it. You know, we have all these states talking secession movements, the Free State Project up in New Hampshire. Something like 9 of the candidates running for legislature in Vermont are openly talking secession. There are secession movements in Texas, Alaska, several of them here in Hawaii. People are fed up. They're saying enough is enough. Why should we throw good money after bad on all these illegal wars? And especially as our government, clearly in a desperate panic effort attack to distract us all from this mess they've made of this country, they're trying as hard as they can to start a new war with Iran, which could very easily blossom into a full world war. We may already be in one in the eyes of future history. I mean, I have yet to find out. How many countries does the United States have to invade before it's considered a world war? Because we've already invaded Afghanistan, Iraq, Somalia, Yemen, Pakistan, Afghanistan. Now we're sneering at Iran. It's ridiculous. It really, really, really is. All right. Let's see. Ending up the top of this first hour here. We have a story, gentleman by the name of Justin Wolf. I mean, just to show you how completely wacko the American justice system has become at this point. And we talked about the frame-up of James Earl Ray, Leonard Peltier, Mumia Al-Jabbar, Bruno Richard Hauptmann. And there's another travesty getting ready to take place. There's a young man named Justin Wolf. And he is in prison, on death row, awaiting execution. Now, here's the funny thing. He did not kill the murder victim, and everybody knows it. Okay, there's another gentleman by the name of Owen Barber who has confessed to shooting Danny Patrol, you know, nine times with a Smith & Wesson, 9mm. Just killed him right there. Now, Barber was looking at the possibility of the death penalty, but he made a deal with the district attorney, a plea bargain. In exchange for immunity from the death penalty, he turned around and accused Justin Wolf of hiring him to kill this Danny Patrol. And on the basis of that one accusation from a witness with a clear motive to lie and no other evidence at all, they tried Justin Wolf and sentenced him to death. And it's just this weird situation where the guy who actually did the killing escapes the death penalty by laying the blame on another guy who gets sentenced to death for the murder the first guy did. And that is how messed up the American justice system is and why this whole plea bargain thing is such a ridiculous perversion of the principles of justice. And it's why I cannot support a death penalty, because our government does make mistakes. If you don't believe me, look at the economy right now. If you lock somebody up in prison wrongly, you know, false accusation, wrongful imprisonment, you can let him go. And yes, maybe he's lost his youth or her youth, and maybe he's picked up a few diseases in there, but at least he gets some kind of portion of his life and freedom back. Once you execute somebody, once you execute them, you can't take that back. And because our justice system does make mistakes, no moral person should support a death penalty. Because as far as I'm concerned, when we look at cases like Justin and James Earl Ray and Leonard Peltier, there's reasonable doubt on everybody who's behind bars in this country right now. Absolutely. Okay, earlier today, a passenger train derailed in Washington, D.C., and a Red Line car derailed about 10:30 a.m. local time. Wheel came off the train. The wheel just fell off. When I went to Google to find more details about this story, I discovered that there are actually a lot of train derailments taking place in the United States of America. And unless there's some place where everybody sees it, or there's, you know, death and blood that looks good on the TV news, it just doesn't get reported anymore. It's become that common. And it's just another indicator that our nation, its infrastructure is in decline. They're not taking care of the rails. They're not taking care of the trains. They're spending all the money on war. We're on a war footing. They're bankrupting this nation to go out on all these wars, and we don't even know why. We absolutely do not know why, other than, as they finally admitted in the Chilcot inquiry, that Israel is in there saying, yes, go do it. Yes, go do it. By the way, a little side note. I was talking about this Bill Cohen, who's a commentator over on Fox, who was out there screaming that we should skip sanctions and just start blocking Iran's oil shipments. Did a little research. Turns out, yes, he's a member of AIPAC, Israel Firster. So now you know who's really flogging us into all these wars. All right, we're going to take a break for news and commercials. We'll be back in about 7 minutes. Join us on the air, 866-582-9933, 866-582-9933, and we will be right back.
Welcome to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. Hour number two of our Thank Goodness It's Friday show here, getting into a long weekend. And, of course, obviously, Valentine's Day is coming up for those of you who have a significant other. And it was kind of interesting. I was listening on the news break where they're reminding everybody, it's almost Valentine's. You've got to go out there and spend. You know, and it's just more of that flogging the people to get more money out of them. And not that I'm opposed to Valentine's Day and showing, you know, your honey that you love them. Although, frankly, you ought to be doing that 365 days a year. You know, being a total bum and then buying roses on one day does not get you off the hook, I don't think. Anyway, turning over to the situation in the Middle East, it is very obvious that the U.S. government is desperate to get a war going with Iran. We're seeing all kinds of different propaganda. They seem to be pulling off this idea that Iran is some kind of a nuclear threat. They're just not getting the traction with it. Enough people apparently understand enough nuclear physics to know that a 20% enrichment for medical isotopes is still a very long way away from a weapons-grade material, which is 95 to 98%. And the IAEA is in there saying, look, they're not doing anything. You know, they're doing exactly what they're allowed to do under the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. So, now, of course, we've got this situation where they're trying to get Iran to send out their low-enriched uranium in exchange for fuel rods. And the sticking point is that the United States and Israel and the rest of their cohorts are demanding Israel send it all out and then wait patiently for the fuel rods to come back. And, of course, Iran does not want to do that because the last time they sent low-enriched uranium out to another country for reprocessing, France in particular, they didn't get it back. France reneged on the deal here. And today, Iran's ambassador to France, Marie Mir Abu Talebi, basically demanded that the French need to be a little bit more even-handed in their dealings with Iran, because the ambassador on TV reminded France that it helped Israel develop their nuclear program back in the 1950s. And so France's appearance of neutrality is definitely not going to work here. All right. So, anyway, turning northward to Canada. Canada is now trying to pass a series of laws that will make it a crime to criticize Israel. And the rationale there is they're trying to mutate what the word anti-Semitism means. Now, classically, traditionally, if you go to the dictionary, anti-Semitism is a dislike of Semites, descendants of Shem, in the biblical sense, simply because they are Semites. And the Semitic peoples include the original Hebrew Jewish people and the Arabs, including the Palestinians, does not include the Ashkenazi, who are descended from the Khazars. But Israel has tried to basically modify the word or redefine it so that it is only applicable to the Jews, that if you don't say something appropriate, you know, if you say something bad about Israel, oh, you're being an anti-Semite and so forth and so on. Well, they've kind of burned that out, and now basically Canada is taking it a step further by saying that any criticism of Israel is anti-Semitic and therefore can be punishable under Canadian law. I used to think Canada had their heads on straight about freedom and so forth and so on, but this idea of criminalizing criticism of Israel is nonsense. Okay, it's like saying that criticism of the Nazis should be banned because it's anti-German. You know, Hitler didn't really do anything wrong. You just don't like the German people. You know, you're anti-Aryan. That's what's going on here. And it's nonsense, but I think it underscores the fact that Israel is, they realize they're fighting a losing battle on the public relations front. In fact, there was this other little story here about how this think tank has come out and is now saying that there is a global, organized delegitimization campaign against Israel. And these people are in denial, okay, because the reason Israel is being thought of so poorly is Operation Cast Lead. But apparently in their own mind, there is no reasonable reason for anybody to find fault with what Israel did to Gaza and Palestine. Therefore, all the criticism and opposition. It must be a plot. It's a conspiracy against Israel. And they're out there basically thinking that if they can spend enough money and get enough countries to pass laws saying that you can't say anything bad about Israel, that the problem is going to go away. And no, it won't. Because when you start passing laws saying that you can't criticize anybody, that's the end of freedom of speech. You pass laws that say it's illegal to criticize any particular favorite group, that's racism and discrimination. And I think most people understand when that starts happening, you're living in a dictatorship. We're going to go to the phones. We've got Solomon in Brazil. Aloha, Solomon. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind today?
Thank you very much. Saraba, my querido hermano Ribeiro, and good afternoon to your distinguished audience. I heard that the contribution to your effort is framed today in the economic topic, and I will gladly join you.
Okay.
Even I have a little piece of advice, economic advice. Buy cinnamon, because cinnamon shares might easily gain substantial return next winter.
You mean when the flu comes back?
Exactly, because Mike always recommends cinnamon. Well,
yes.
Anyway, brother Ribeiro, in my personal analysis, the economic scenario that today is living in the United States of America and the rest of the world, but mainly the United States of America, because the rest of the world is suffering of United States sickness, is the result of a serious moral weakness in our people, and mainly during the last 80 years. Even worse since the beginning of the New Deal, because we didn't really care where our apparent wealth was coming from. And I have in my hand, and I'm not going to share it, but I have it if you want it, I can even share it with you, a long, long, long list of United States military interventions all over the world to guarantee the corporation profits. And corporation never gave money to the people from their own pocket.
We understand that. We understand that, Brother Solomon, and I've published that list many, many times about all the U.S. interventions here. I really want to get into this situation. This idea that our evils are brought about because of a lack of morality, I think by and large the majority of Americans are very moral people. They understand that killing is bad, that stealing is bad, that lying is bad. It is our leadership that seems to operate without moral principles, and maybe from their point of view, morality and rules are something imposed on the slaves and serfs, but not applicable to, you know, the self-described elites. I mean, we see them, you know, constantly lying and stealing, and people are getting killed, and, you know, like John F. Kennedy and Robert F. Kennedy and the rest of it, and the perpetrators are never caught. So clearly we live in a society where ordinary people are expected to obey the rules and can be punished if they do not, but obviously the people at the very top of our society can pretty much do as they please and get away with it.
But then which one should really be your attitude? Just praise them and applaud them, or we have to rebel? Because that is
I would agree with the rebel, and I'll tell you why. I'll tell you why real quick, because we're almost at the end of the segment here. I think we must have a moral society, because if we have an entire society behaving the way our leaders are behaving, it's going to tear itself apart. That may be, in fact, a big part of what's going on right now.
Okay, well, I understand your point of view. I am still thinking that if we have not make any kind of a strong claim and complain and noise from all the things that have been done in our name and all the money that have been collected from poor countries just to feed apparently or necessity of wealth, then we will never get out of the problem.
Well, you know, I definitely understand that the United States has been behaving as an imperial power, especially since the end of World War II. And, of course, all empires do fall. We're even beginning to see that in Afghanistan, the graveyard of empires. And the bottom line is, you know, the reason I do not call for a revolt or a rebellion is I am convinced that the U.S. government and its economy is going to collapse all by itself, much as what happened in the USSR. We just need to be prepared to ride it out, and we need to have decided ahead of time what kind of a government we want to replace it, because there's going to be all these carpetbaggers coming in and saying, look, I got a brand new government ready to go. All you got to do is sign right here and pay your taxes, and we'll take care of the rest. A person like that shows up, you tar and feather them. Brother Solomon, thank you for the phone call. We got to take a break for commercials, and we'll be right back.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Welcome to What Really Happened Radio. Visit us online at whatreallyhappened.com. And now, set your eyes on the future, and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. We're talking about Israel, and we're talking about their problems with their public relations. And that is that for the last 60 years, Israel has just sort of kind of gotten used to this idea that nobody in the American media would ever say anything critical of Israel or anything bad about them, that Israel was always going to be portrayed as this poor, helpless little nation surrounded by these vile, evil enemies that were always threatening it. And yet, Israel is the one that always seems to be bombing other people and stealing their land. And if you look at the map of Israel, from the declaration of it by David Ben-Gurion to the present day, Israel is always growing and always expanding. We're always hearing about more bulldozers going into Palestinian lands, bulldozing property to put up a new illegal settlement, which is a violation of the Geneva Accord, not to mention a handful of United Nations resolutions. And Israel has just gotten used to the idea that they could do this sort of thing to their neighbors, to the Palestinians, and get away with it, that nobody would ever, you know, ever say anything bad about it. And now with the advent of the Internet, that's no longer true. And Israel doesn't know how to deal with it. They have never had to deal with an honest and open public debate about what it is they're doing. And all the UN resolutions they've broken, the fact that they still, to this very day, 60 years out, will not draw national borders, because then they'd have to live with them. They still don't have a constitution, 60 years on. So if Israel wants to sit there and say, you know, we're okay, and anybody criticizing us, it's a conspiracy to delegitimize us, that's nonsense. Israel is delegitimizing itself because it's not behaving as other civilized nations behave, which is you draw your borders, you live within them, and you engage in commerce with your neighbors instead of dropping white phosphorus all over them. Now, perhaps not too surprisingly, in the wake of the Goldstone Report, which Israel is still trying to dismiss as an anti-Semitic screed, even though Goldstone himself is Jewish, the United Nations basically took the Goldstone Report and requested Hamas and Israel to conduct their own independent probe of the allegations contained within the Goldstone Report. Hamas is doing so. Israel has announced today they will not. They're basically taking the attitude that the allegations in the Goldstone Report are beneath their dignity or some such nonsense. And they're basically saying that, no, we're not going to investigate. We deny everything, and that's the end of it. That's their attitude. Now, a possible alarming sign, along with the attack on my website, Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Admiral Michael Mullen, will arrive in Israel on Sunday, Valentine's Day. New Valentine's Day massacre coming? I don't know. And he is the guest of IDF Chief of General Staff, Lieutenant General Gabi Ashkenazi. Now, it is already leaked out they're talking about Iran. And obviously, I think the question before the board is, how do we start a war with Iran? How do we goad them into doing something that we can use as an excuse to attack? You know, what propaganda device can we come up with to sell this war? They're not getting traction with nuclear threat. I'm amazed they tried it after the debacle with Iraq's nukes, which didn't exist. Personally, I found it insulting that the U.S. government and Israel were going to come back and say, yeah, okay, yeah, we lied to you about Saddam's nuclear weapons, but you can trust us. We're telling you the truth. Iran is a nuclear threat. They're building a power station. Oh, my stars in heaven, it's a power station. And they're making medical isotopes. You don't know what they're going to do with those medical isotopes. And needless to say, they're not getting a lot of traction with that. Now they're trying, and this is all over Twitter. If you want to find out where what's going on with the propaganda, go out to Twitter and do some searches, and you'll find out what's going on here. They're trying to basically sell this idea that the people of Iran are oppressed by Ahmadinejad, who they voted into power, back into power overwhelmingly last summer, I might add. But he's an evil, bad man, and the Iranian people are struggling for their freedom from this really bad man. To the point where we, the wonderful United States of America, have to go in and invade and save those Iranians from their elected government. Personally, at this point, I'm ready for somebody to invade the United States and save us from our not-so-elected government, but that's a story for a different radio show. But the point is, this is the same hoax they used to trick us into Vietnam and dozens of other interventions. We were supposed to be bringing democracy to the world, and we never do. Every time we invade a country, militarily intervene, we wind up putting in a tin pot dictator. Papa Doc Duvalier, Pinochet, Batista, the Shah of Iran. And that's what's going on here. Back in 1953, when the elected leader of Iran, Dr. Mohammad Mossadegh, said Iran is going to start charging for Iran's oil. It's our oil. You have to pay for it. And Great Britain and America, who had sort of gotten used to this idea of being able to just suck it out and take it away for free, got very upset. And so the Central Intelligence Agency went into Iran, and they planted all this stuff in the press about how the Iranian people hated Dr. Mossadegh. And they were struggling for freedom, and we had to go in there, and we had to just bring democracy to the Iranian people. And sure enough, overthrew the government and installed the Shah. Now, the Shah was not a democratic government. And it makes perfect sense. If you overthrow a democratically elected government, that new government you're bringing in will never dare allow elections. They'll lose the first one. They won't allow freedom of speech for anybody to discuss just exactly how is it that you are in charge of our government now. And the rule of the Shah basically bore that out. He created this secret police, the Savak, where anybody who questioned his right to be on the peacock throne simply disappeared, was beaten up, was tortured, you know, the sort of things the United States is doing right now to people like Binyam Mohammed. Last summer, they tried it again during the elections. We know, we've documented, the Bush administration and then the Obama administration sent millions of dollars, over $100 million, to the opposition groups in Iran to give them the funds to try and destabilize and overthrow that government. Now, if another country was sending hundreds of millions of dollars into the United States to fund people to overthrow the U.S. government, the elected U.S. government, wouldn't we consider that a not very nice thing? I think that's definitely the truth. And yet, that's what the U.S. was doing in Iran. Now, last year, because of a couple of major strategic blunders on their part, the coup failed. Now they're back trying to reignite it, thinking that if they can't get the U.S. to go along with invading Iran because of a power station, that maybe we'll fall for that, oh, we're bringing the democracy thing again. So far, it doesn't look like they're getting traction on that. Will they try a new false flag attack, a new 9/11? Will they blow something up and say, oh my goodness, the Iranians did it? They might. They are that desperate for a war. And we shouldn't be surprised if there's a really, really big bang. All right, we're coming down here to the end of the segment here. We're going to take a break for more commercials. When we come back, we're going to be talking with Brad in Kentucky. And let's see, there's the music, there's the magic music. Okay, we're keeping an eye on our website, the technicians are working on it. It's kind of going up and down and up and down, and we're still trying to figure out what's going on with that situation. I think we're just going to go ahead and switch over to the new server at some point. All right, we'll be right back after these words from our sponsors.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN, great talk radio starts here.
Some have maxed out all their credit cards. Some are working two jobs and living in cars. Minimum wage won't pay for a roof, won't pay for a drink. If you gotta have proof, distract yourself, Mr. CEO. See how far 5:15 an hour will go. Take a part-time job at one of your stores. I bet you can't make it here anymore.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. We're going to go right to the phones. Brad in Kentucky. Aloha, Brad. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Oh, aloha, Mike. And I'm glad you went to a two-hour show. It's much better.
thank you. I appreciate that.
Who did you piss off?
No. Well, yeah, it's a long but distinguished list.
Anyway, and also I just happened to wanted to say I recently checked out the movie Brazil recently.
Isn't that a great one?
How visionary is that movie, huh?
Oh, it was so far ahead of its time. And, you know, Terry Gilliam almost got into a fist fight with the producers at Universal because, you know, they wanted to cut a lot of stuff out of there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, because it was such a controversial film and everything. So anyway,
well,
but yeah, it is a wonderful film and very predictive. And if mm-hmm. you have not seen it, get it from Netflix. It is a wonderful, wonderful film. I think there is a director's cut out now.
Director's cut. That's what I watched.
Yeah, they put in all that this stuff back in.
Mm-hmm. But anyway, one thing I wanted to address with you. I know you've been saying for quite some time that you think the government will collapse. I tend to disagree. Because these people will not give over power of their own accord, as far as I'm concerned. In my opinion, I don't know if you agree with me or not, but our government was taken over back in 1963 or by a coup d'état when Kennedy was assassinated. Okay.
Well, that was one of them, but I think our government was taken over in 1913 when the Federal Reserve Act was passed.
Definitely the
country has definitely gone downhill since John F. Kennedy.
That was the last president we had that really tried to change things.
That tried to stand up to the Federal Reserve, yes.
Right. So I think in order to change things again, is going to require another coup d'etat from the inside. Okay.
Well, that's a possibility. I've heard a lot of talk about, you know, possible, you know, military coup. The problem with a coup d'etat is inevitably it's done for the benefit of the coup plotters and is not done for the benefit of the ordinary people. You don't see somebody to go to that kind of trouble and expense and planning to acquire that kind of power than to just turn around and give it away. I mean, that happens in the movies like Gladiator, but that's not real life. You know, basically, at some point, I still think the U.S. government and the economy is going to collapse. And we've got to be ready for basically what are we going to do after that.
Yeah. Even if Ron Paul were to get elected or someone like him.
They'll never let him in. They'll never let him in. They're already hijacking the Tea Party to steal it away from him.
Right.
Okay.
So that's just, you know, I just wanted to share my thoughts with you on that. And love your show, and hope the website comes back up soon.
Well, we just decided, you know, we could fix this one, but it would be a waste of time because we're ready to move to a new server. So we're just going to go ahead and do the switch over to the new server. And it's a much more powerful machine with much better filtering, and hopefully that'll keep the hackers at bay a little bit. But again, it simply underscores the fact that there are people out there in this world who absolutely think they have the right to make sure that you are not allowed to see or read or hear certain things that they don't like. That's called dictatorship, and we're opposed to that kind of thing around here. All right, thank you for the call. We're going to let you go and switch over to Matt in Oregon. Aloha, Matt. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Aloha, Mike.
Aloha.
I wanted to give a plug for the national strike. Everyone go to tax315.com, check it out, and participate. I've created some handouts for people to, you know, take and print out and give to their neighbors. Hey, have you heard about the tax, the national strike?
Mm-hmm.
Give them a little information. If I send you some, the handout, would you post it on your website?
As soon as we get it back up and running.
Cool. So it's whr@whatreallyhappened.com?
Correct.
Okay, I'll send it there.
All right, thanks an awful lot. Okay, I guess that was Matt in Oregon there. All right, interesting little story here. Every once in a while, one of these tyrants does get their comeuppance, and apparently the former Uruguayan dictator finally got hauled into court and was sentenced to 30 years. So Bush, Blair, and Obama, take note, it is entirely possible that we can haul you before the Hague for war crimes charges, as you so richly deserve. Now, a story that we saw yesterday, we didn't quite get to it in our show. I'm going to get to it right now. The headline was, Obama may look past UN on Iran. This is a very polite way of saying that Barack Obama is getting ready to basically skip the United Nations because they're not going to get any more sanctions against Iran through the UN. Russia and China have both said no more. They're not working. Iran isn't doing anything, so forth and so on, and it's not going to happen. So now it looks like, and again, we've seen this before, when the United Nations is useful to U.S. policy, you know, the UN is a wonderful institution. When the United Nations does not go along with U.S. policy, they're irrelevant, they're a relic from the last century, and we're going to go on without them. So basically, Obama is starting to lay the publicity political framework for a unilateral attack on Iran. And it could just be as simple as saying, look, we're attacking tomorrow, and that's all there is to it, and you're not going to stop us. We've worked for this war. We wanted this war. We deserve it, and nobody's going to deny us. It may just be that obvious and heavy-handed in the sure and certain knowledge that the American people are not quite angry enough yet to get out the tar and feathers. But I think we're getting close, to judge by some of the emails that we're getting here. All right, we're going to go to the phones. We've got Karen in Oregon. Aloha, Karen. I can almost imagine what you want to talk about.
Well, then I won't disappoint you.
Okay, please go for it.
All right. I just wanted to let you know that now we do have the two calls scheduled. Thank you very much for putting that information up there. And we're starting to book guests on the call. Tomorrow morning at 11, we're going to have Larry B. Craft. He's going to show up. We're also going to have on the Wednesday night call Steve Hempling. And we're going to be focusing a lot on taxes in the call so that people start to really learn that it is voluntary and what we can do to really put pressure on our government to take our power back and to get their hands out of our pockets. We also really want to support people to take the link at taxfree15.com so that they can sign the Articles of Freedom, and that also has in it a clause about the illegality of the tax reform.
Mm-hmm. You know, it occurs to me that one of the reasons we may have been hacked today is I put up this PDF file. It's a court transcript from a case called Sullivan versus the United States. And on page 22, going into page 23, the judge in the case, James C. Fox, admits in the court record that the 16th Amendment authorizing the federal income tax failed ratification. Then he goes on to say that, well, we just pretend that it was because we need it. And this is actually in the court record, and that may be the reason that we got hacked today.
That may be. The IRS definitely does not want to be put out of a job, and the Federal Reserve System, who they pay all of our 1040 income taxes to, they want this scam to keep going as well. But more and more, by taking our money, by stealing our money, by imposing these restrictions, and now to keep us from thinking for ourselves and to be healthy, we got John McCain giving his bill out, and so that pretty soon we won't be able to get our vitamin C without a prescription. It'll be limited dosage. I mean, it's a full-on assault, and everyone really needs to take this to heart.
Yeah, we really definitely do. So, you know, thank you for the call. We got to let you go here. We got one more segment for tonight's show, and we'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio? Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
We will not go down in the night without a fight. You can burn up our mosques and our homes and our schools, but our spirit will never die. We will not go down in Gaza tonight.
Aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. We're just finishing up our show. I was looking at one of the news feeds during the commercial break. This is a major news network show. And the stories that are talking about is how the inventor of the Frisbee has died. And I love Frisbees and everything, but and it's sad that he's died. He lived to be 90. I mean, you know, come on. And how Michelle Obama is very concerned about childhood obesity, but apparently not to the point of wanting to take out the aspartame and monosodium glutamate and synthetic bovine growth hormones and all the other chemicals in our food that actually contribute to the problem. But it's just an excuse for her to get up there and speechify I remember Lady Bird Johnson going around talking, we're going to beautify America. We're going to beautify America. And nobody had a clue what she actually meant by it. But it was just an excuse for her to get out and get some airtime and be famous and all the rest of that. So Michelle Obama is viewing childhood obesity as a threat to the economy and the national security. So I guess the Blackwater troops are going to start walking down the street and shooting all the fatties they can find. In more serious news, in the more serious part of the world here, Lebanon is expressing a certain amount of concern over the fact that Israel is once again flying their warplanes over the border into Lebanese airspace. Now, when you take a military plane and you fly it across the border without permission, this is called an act of war. What Israel is trying to do is to get Lebanon or Hezbollah to shoot back so that Israel can say, oh my goodness, the Lebanese are shooting at us. You're on the wrong side of the border. That doesn't matter. They're shooting at us. The war is on. And we're going to go have fun and so forth and so on. The situation, of course, is fraught with peril. We know that Israel has never quite gotten over the fact that they lost the last war with Lebanon, not only in terms of not attaining their objective at the Litani River, but it was another public relations disaster for them. And it looks like they want to come back and have another go at it. Now, this time, the Lebanese Prime Minister, Saad Hariri, is basically saying that if Israel attacks this time, Lebanon is going to stand with Hezbollah. Last time, the Lebanese government kind of officially stood back and said, okay, this is between Hezbollah and Israel. And then Israel came in and they were bombing Lebanese villages for no good reason. They practically carpeted the place with landmines that are still a problem there. It's killing people and livestock. Blew up a bunch of UN observation posts. I mean, just, you know, really very ill-mannered invasion, as it were. So Lebanon is now saying that basically if Israel attacks Hezbollah, they're basically attacking Lebanon itself. And so this is another situation with a very, very short fuse. We have Israel talking about going to war with Syria. If Syria refuses to permanently cede the Golan Heights to Israel, Israel is back in Gaza with bulldozers and guns and warplanes and bombs. They're trying to provoke a reaction, and the reaction will be the excuse to go back in for Operation Cast Lead 2. And anytime anybody says, you know, maybe you ought not to behave that way, maybe, just maybe, you know, Israel needs to move into the 21st century. I know they want to keep the entire world living in 1950, end of World War II, and the Nazi horrors are fresh in everybody's memory. But I think the world has kind of reached the point where we're tired of hearing about the Holocaust, whatever happened. I'm tired of hearing about the people who said this happened, and I'm even tired of hearing from the people who said, no, it didn't really happen. It's the first half of the previous century. And it should not be used as a shield and excuse for the fact that we have genocides and war crimes taking place right now. Whatever happened in Germany in the last century does not justify what is happening in Palestine today. Israel likes to imply that it does, but it doesn't. Even if we stipulate all the horror stories and all the really bad movies that we have seen about what terrible people the Nazis were. Those were the Nazis. There were no Palestinians in Germany. There were no Palestinians in the Nazi high command. There were no Palestinians with Hitler and his little group of buddies there, Himmler and the rest of it. Frankly, I don't think Hitler would have much cared for the Palestinians either. But the bottom line is, whatever happened in Germany has nothing to do with Palestine. And yet, Israel expects us to stand back and let Palestine pay the price for it. It doesn't make any sense at all. It really does. It never has. It never, ever has. All the Palestinians know is this foreign invader showed up on their shore and started taking land. And the same world that sacrificed blood and treasure to stop Adolf Hitler from stealing other people's land for his own use, stood back and let Israel do it to the Palestinians. They're a little upset about that, and frankly, I don't blame them. Somebody put up an article earlier today saying, you know, why do all these other countries hate us so much? Is it because of our freedoms? And it was just one of these nonsensical articles that are coming out to try and make it look like, you know, Israel's completely blameless and it's just the Palestinians are being so unreasonable. You know, don't they know they're just supposed to die and get out of the way? And so I answered the question, you know, why are these other countries so angry with the United States of America? And the reason is very simple. Every time Israel attacks Lebanon or Syria or Gaza or the West Bank or Egypt or anywhere, these people are watching their homes and their loved ones blown to bloody shreds and incinerated. And on the shrapnel that remains is printed, made in the USA. That is why they don't like us. And I think it's a very reasonable reaction. All right, we got another caller on the line, Alan in Germany. Aloha, Alan. Wie geht's zu Ihnen?
Yeah, it's very good, Mike. Your German's fantastic.
Danke.
How are you doing?
I'm doing quite well. What can we do for you today?
I'm just tuning in. But there's some stories from Scotland. You know, have you heard about this? It's a child sex abuse ring run right at the top of the Scottish government. It's in the news a lot because the reporter who uncovered it has been arrested yesterday.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, I'll just tell you an email, actually, about it.
Take a look for it.
Okay, thanks. It's, Alan on there. It says, a disturbing case or something like that. But it's on the ukcolumn.org website. And it goes to the top of the Scottish Parliament. And this has happened before, but there's about 14 policemen and social workers and right at the top sort of solicitors involved in terrible child abuse.
I'm looking at it right now. And, you know, I got to tell you, I absolutely can't comprehend why anybody would have those kind of feelings toward a child anyway. And
we know that this is
an epidemic problem with religious orders. And it's not just the Catholics and it's not just the Protestants. I mean, virtually every religion seems to have this problem going on.
These people are mostly atheists, actually. So even the
Say
atheists
again?
Aren't immune. These people are mostly atheists. I think there's not much religion involved in this.
This is definitely in the government. This looks like Scotland's equivalent of the Franklin scandal.
Yeah, absolutely. That's exactly what it is.
Okay, well, I will definitely take a look, and as soon as we're up and running on the new server, I will definitely post this story.
That's splendid. Also, Mike, I sent you a couple of my books. You've got a quote in the back. I just wondered if you've got them. I've sent you a few in the past, and you hadn't got them. It's a book called The Con, and I think it was getting confiscated or something at your post.
It could very well be. I have not gotten it yet. Did you use the New Hampshire address?
Oh, this is about a year ago I sent it, but I've sent a couple since then.
Oh, yeah, things don't get into the United States. I remember one time I wanted to buy a green pocket laser because I do a lot of public speeches, and the customs people confiscated it on the way from China.
Yeah, you might shine it into a pilot's light and, you know, up in the sky.
And I went out on eBay and I bought one actually more powerful for less money, and it was delivered without any problem. They just told, you know what it is? Somebody at customs said, "Oh, a green laser. It's pretty. I'm going to keep that."
Yeah, all right, they're thieves.
They are, and it's legal thievery. All right, well, Alan, thank you. I'm going to look at this situation. Child rape is protected by the state. It does sound like it's a repeat of the Franklin scandal. You know the problem with political power? It attracts the kind of people who shouldn't have it. And I'm beginning to think that our entire leadership culture are nothing but sociopathic sickos. Really, it does seem like that. There are no sane people up there. All right, that's it for our show. We're going to call it a night. We'll be back tomorrow morning with the author of Transparent Kabul, talking about Israel's influence on the Israel lobby in the United States and the push for war. So until tomorrow, have a good evening. Stay safe. Drive carefully. Hug your loved ones. Don't forget Valentine's Day coming up. And aloha, America.